Community.
Vibrant people.
A representation of our expanded strength.
Identity crisis.
And inability to be exterminated.
Legacy.
Roots that are established way beyond geographical placement.
Recognizing our combined struggle.
Migrating community.
Bridging gaps.
History. And
I don't know.
What does belonging look like when it stretches across borders? How does one build a sense of home away from home? Welcome, this is Diaspora Diaries, a podcast powered by Transmission Roundhouse. I'm your host, Awa, and today's episode is a bit of a special one. Today, I'm on my own, and I'm diving back into the episodes that have been released so far. When I started Diaspora Diaries, I don't think I realized quite how much my own understanding of diaspora would evolve alongside these conversations. Diaspora is one of those words that seems obvious until you stop and ask what it actually means. The more I studied it, the more I spoke to people, the less it felt like a fixed category, and the more it felt like a conversation. Disclaimer, of course, diaspora has never been an empty concept. It has long been associated with the displacement and dispersal of people, often through slavery, colonization, persecution, or war. While scholars continue to debate who or what the term should incorporate, those histories remain central to how many understand diaspora today. So this episode is not an attempt to settle those debates. Instead, I found myself wondering what happens once the concept enters people's lives. How do people relate to it? What work does it do? What can diaspora become? Listening back to the episodes, I realized that my guests weren't all speaking about diaspora in quite the same way. Some related to the words, others question it altogether. Some spoke about culture, others about home. Space, community, belonging. But none of these conversations tried to define diaspora once and for all. And maybe that's precisely the point. So today, I want to go back to those conversations and ask a very simple question. What can diaspora be? What I started with when thinking about diaspora clearly was culture and this urge to make sure that I carry mine wherever I go. That's something Tariq, who features in the first episode of season 2 on spoken word and the politics of awareness, also seemed to relate to.
My life, the culture that I come from, was shaped by Jamaican and overall Caribbean values. So I do see myself as British, but I also see myself as a descendant of the homeland, which is for me Jamaica, Grenada and Trinidad.
Similarly, in the episode on inherited boxes, Binta said,
I am part of two diasporas, although one may not claim me as readily, but I am part of the Senegalese African diaspora and I'm also part of the Italian diaspora. I'm also part of the Australian diaspora, actually, if we want to be specific with it. I think my cultural ties are more rooted in Australia than they are anywhere else. But I am very much a Senegalese and Italian woman, and those existences hold equal parts.
Culture came up in different ways across several of these conversations. So guests reflected on what happens when culture is displaced, mixed up, hybridized, and also on pursuing one's heritage as a very active effort to counter the dilution.
I've had to be very intentional with connecting with my heritage, because my parents didn't grow up in the Caribbean, they grew up here. So as much as I have Caribbean influences in the way that I was raised, I'm very much a London-born Jamaican, Grenadian, Trinidadian. So it's about me investing in that sort of learning.
And that urge to keep culture alive becomes even more pressing in the face of very direct, imminent cultural suppression, which is something Levin insisted on in episode 5 on the complexities of statelessness.
Growing up, I spent a lot of time with my grandma, and she would always speak of what it is to be Kurdish. And the way she would describe it is through how we keep our culture alive across so many different spaces, across so many different countries. And so when I grew up and learned that the vocabulary for that that existed was diaspora, that's how I choose to hold it still to this day.
Listening to Lavin, I found myself wondering whether diaspora sometimes becomes more than culture, whether it also becomes a claim, not necessarily one that holds the name diaspora directly, but a claim to exist, to be recognized, and to carry one's ways of being despite attempts to erase them. As I kept listening, I noticed something else. For some guests, diaspora wasn't primarily about culture. It was about place. Fouad, who features in episode 3 on All About Love, instinctively spoke about diaspora in relation to exploring what is home and learning to navigate new places.
I was born in Lagos. I lived there till I was 10 years old before moving here in the middle of winter. Moving from Lagos to London in December, it's not for the week. But yeah, like I often find myself thinking about home and where home is as I navigate my identity.
As a place, we might think of diaspora as building home away from home. It is where we, or generations before us, have settled, rebuilt ourselves, and continued to grow. For Lavin, who talks about the complexities of mapping a Kurdish national identity when no Kurdish state is recognized under international law, diaspora becomes precisely about space as opposed to place.
My understanding is all Kurds have known historically is self-determination, self-validation, and self-legitimization. And I think it's not something new. Wherever you find yourself, whether it is in the quote-unquote homeland or whether it's quote-unquote abroad, you're doing that same process of preserving your culture, finding ways to keep it alive, trying to instill it in the generations that come. And so that's like the consistency of what it is to be Kurdish, and therefore that's what makes it strong regardless. Like there's not like a set location that sort of is the heart and the most concentrated form of it.
Has the monopoly over the culture, right?
Right. Having a space to go back to is what I think makes the most sense for everything I've said about Kurdistan being stateless, because there are so many spaces that we go back to. And place is the thing that I think for us is the politicized, oppressed subject.
I really love that distinction. If home isn't always tied to territory, maybe it lives elsewhere in relationships, memories, practices, and shared experiences. Listening back, I started wondering whether for some of my guests, diaspora becomes everything that makes home home and that makes you you. From what was carried with to what has been added along the way. The people who shape us, the art that emerges from these encounters, the spaces we grow through them, sometimes even beyond the immediate need to name them.
I'm just like always in loads of different spaces, and I'm often in loads of different spaces with other Black people, right? Typically Black people from the continent of Africa. However, I don't feel like our identity as members of the diaspora is as spoken as it is lived. Do you know what I mean? Like a lot of like the art and things that we create do reference our identity as members of the diaspora, but it's not necessarily something that we kind of like speak on and hold. Do you know what I mean? So like I feel like it's difficult to be like, I'm part of a diaspora community, because I guess that's not the name on the door. You know what I mean? But it's what we kind of like communicate with each other.
Of course, none of these understandings exists in isolation. Culture becomes a claim, place becomes a space, space becomes community. That's precisely what made these conversations so interesting to revisit. Ultimately, listening back to all of this, I found myself thinking less about diaspora as something to define and more about what people do with the concept. A way of making sense of movement, of finding community, of rebuilding a sense of home, of naming experiences that might otherwise feel disconnected.
And that's also reflected in the reasons Luke gave when sharing why he did not consider himself part of a diaspora in the episode on rethinking borders.
My dad's family came from India. My mum's side are from the UK, from England. But my dad was born in the UK. And I don't have much of a connection to India, really. I've been a few times, but it's like, you know, kind of distant family because my grandparents moved here when they were sort of 20, 21. So I wouldn't really consider myself part of the diaspora because I don't know how useful it is. We can talk about how you would define diaspora, but it generally means a sort of three-way connection between people in different places and then back to an originary homeland of some kind. So if I felt that I had a specific connection with Indian people around the UK and the Gulf and North America, and we all had a family home background, sense of deep connection to the land or the people or the language or the culture back in India, then I would consider myself part of a diaspora. But because that isn't the case, I don't consider myself usefully a member of the diaspora.
But even when diaspora does resonate, it isn't necessarily the answer to everything. Maybe it's less a destination than a starting point. A way into conversations, communities, and shared experiences, but not a guarantee of belonging. That's something Binta and I also reflected on in our conversation on inherited boxes.
I think identity is important, but I do think that my experience with it is that I've gotten to a place now where it doesn't serve me as much as it once did when I was trying to find myself as like that young 16-year-old.
What about diaspora then? Because I feel like I'm in a place where diaspora serves me a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm also aware of its limits. And I feel like maybe it will only get me so far.
And I think it will only get you so far, if I'm being completely honest. I think the idea of diaspora to me is the same idea that we often experience with the romanticization, if that's the word, of like our homelands, in air quotes. So like Senegal, for example, where you romanticize this connection to the land and to its people. And then you go there and you realize there are some people here that I like. There are some people here I do not rock with, don't want to chat to. Just like any social landscape that you find yourself in, there is no one thing that connects you with in identity with everyone else that makes them guaranteed to be a person that is safe to be around, good to be around, kind to be around. You can apply that to being from a country. You can apply that to the diaspora. You can apply that from being from a faith. There is no identity marker that I can think of where I can say 100% everyone who has this identity marker, we're brethrens from jump. There are always going to be, you know, unpleasant characters. There are always going to be humans that you just don't gel with. And so I think with the concept of diaspora and diaspora being a safe place, like I completely get that and I relate to it heavily. But I don't think it's diaspora in and of itself that is that safe space for you. It's you meeting people who you connect with on a level because you have some similar experiences by virtue of being from the same place, but also because you have other things in common that go beyond the land that you come from. And so I think that diaspora is definitely like a good starting point. The same way if you're a Muslim, meeting other Muslims is always a great starting point, but it's not a guarantee that that is your person and that you're going to find home in that space.
So somewhere between history, displacement, migration, and identity, we find diaspora. Or maybe more accurately even, we find diasporas, many different ways of relating to movement, memory, belonging, and one another. It may be a place we build, a culture we carry, a claim we make, a space we create, a community we find, or a tool we use. And maybe that's exactly why diaspora has remained such a contested concept. Not because anything can be called diaspora, because clearly I wouldn't agree with that, but because people continue to negotiate what the term means, who it includes, and what it makes possible, really. These conversations certainly haven't given me one definition of diaspora. If anything, they've done quite literally the opposite. They've reminded me that the value of diaspora may not lie in finding the perfect definition, but in continuing to ask what it means to different people in different contexts and why. This was the last episode of season 2. Thank you so much for coming on this journey with me. And I can't wait to come back for season 3 with new themes, new formats, new people, and a brand new energy. As always, if you have any thoughts, any opinions, if you have your own ways of understanding diaspora, I'd love to hear from you. This was Diaspora Diaries, a podcast powered by Transmission Roundhouse. You can find us on Instagram at Diaspora X Diaries.